We're holding on page Samach in Beitza, Ois Beis. We learned last time about the pasuk Kiched Vas Hashem Hima Uzchem, which the Gemara said we learned from that Hashem says, borrow on my behalf to meet your Shabbos and Yom Tov expenses, and trust me and I'll pay back. And we talked about the various details that the post can talk about how that fits, how Tosfos and then various other Rishonim and Achronim talk about how that squares with Asei Shabbat Chachov Al Tzarech Labrius. So now getting back to that topic. Tony Rab Tachlifa Achud Rabbi Noi Choizah. Rab Tachlifa, the brother of Rabbi Noi from Choizna. So apparently his brother was better known than he is. So Rab Tachlifa says, Kom is a Noisif Shal Odom Ksuvin Loi Merash Shana Vad Yom Kippurim. All of a person's mezonis, all of what he's going to earn and what he's going to spend for the year is all decided from Rosh Hashanah until Yom Kippur. Meaning, as we know, it's a person is judged on Rosh Hashanah and it's signed on Yom Kippur. There is actually a different girsa that says Rosh Hashanah va'ad Rosh Hashanah, meaning that Hashem determines it on Rosh Hashanah for the entire year. Chutz mehetzas shabbosis, vaitzas yamim tovim, vaitzas bonav l'talmud Torah. With the exception of the expenses that a person does for Shabbos and for Yom Tov, and the expenses on a person on tuition and things that a person needs to pay for his children to learn Torah. So those things, in other words, Rashi explains, those are not so altogether. Hashem decides in advance how much he's going to earn the coming year, and also where he's going to earn. He's going to earn such and such from this source and from that source. So a person has to be careful, in other words, not to squander too much of his money. With the exception of these things, those Hashem doesn't determine in advance how much he's going to get and where it's going to come from, depending on how much he regularly spends on Shabbos and Yom Tov and teaching his children Torah. Then Hashem makes it available to him at the time or afterwards. Being poichus in loy, so if he reduces his expenses on those things, that poichus in loy, then Hashem reduces the amount that he's going to have that can be used for those things, the imhoisif, and if he adds to them moisif in loy, then Hashem adds that he'll have more sources of parnasa to be able to make those up. Marshall points out, now we have the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah that mentions that on Pesach the world is judged about the grain, and on Shavuos about the fruit of the trees, and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, what we're saying is that that judgment is on the world at large. How are the crops going to be during the coming year? That's determined on Pesach and Shavuos respectively. Here we're talking about the individual person, how much he's going to make, whether he's going to have a comfortable parnasa or not. There is also actually the Rebbe Rashab in Kuntra Samayim deals with this whole point at great length, because he says the fact is you have a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which we'll get to in a few weeks, Bez Hashem, that talks about different opinions over there. There's an opinion over there of Rav Yossi that Adam Nidin B'chol Yoyim, a person is judged every day. You have another opinion that says that a person is judged every moment. So how does that fit with what we're saying over here, that a person is judged between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? So the Rebbe Rashab goes into a great arichos over there. The gist of it is everything that when we talk about a person's mezonos and a person's parnosa, all has to do with the sphere of malchus. Because through there, that old hashpa comes to the world. So now you have malchus as a whole has to be built up, and that takes place on Rosh Hashanah. We know that the whole idea of Kiyas Shofar is to build up the sphere of malchus. Then you have, though, that will still be, it can still remain Lamaila and not at all come down to the world. So therefore, for that, you need Adam Nidin B'chol Yoyim, that a person is judged every day how exactly it's going to come down into Gashmius, and Adam Nidin B'chol Shah as well, of how he's behaving. And then he goes on and discusses over there in several chapters, Barichos, about the different opinions about that. Basically, he says it comes down to this decision that's made between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. How mitzlabish is it in Gashmius? Is it not malubish in Gashmius at all, such that you need an individual judgment every day in order for it to actually come down in Gashmius to Kabonis Hayom Zoner Avicha? Or is it that it already has a certain, it's already invested to a certain extent in Gashmius, and therefore you don't necessarily need to be judged every day for it? So that would explain the different opinions about that. Anyway, Omar Abba Bohu, Maikra, where is a pasuk that shows this idea that a person's parnasa for the year is determined on Rosh Hashanah? The pasuk says, Tiku Bachodesh Shofar. to blow the shofar on the new month, on Rosh Hashanah, but keseh l'yom chagenim, on the keseh of the day of our Yom Tov. So keseh, we're understanding, is meloshin covered. What is the Yom Tov in which the moon is covered over? Because most of the Yom Tov happen in the middle of the month, so the moon is quite visible. Which Yom Tov comes out at the beginning of the month when the moon is invisible? Have a Yom Tov Rosh Hashanah. That has to be Rosh Hashanah. And the next pasuk continues. It's a law for Yisrael. Mishpata the Yaakov, a judgment for the God of Yaakov. And as the Gemara is going to explain, the word choik actually has a meaning of an apportioned of an allotment of food. So we see that on the Yom Tov, Bakesa, the Yom Chagenu, is the Yom Tov when Hashem determines all of that for the year. Tosfos actually points out a couple of things in this, which are, first of all, Tosfos points out this that we're saying that Shabbos and Yom Tov and Talmud Torah are an exception. We can learn all that, Tosfos says, from the pasuk that we said before, Ki chedvas Hashem hi ma'uzchem. The context is talking about Yom Tov, and therefore Shabbos as well, but also chedvas Hashem also includes Torah, which is the joy of a person. So we see that Talmud Torah is also an exception to the rule. There are Rishonim who actually learn from Tosfos. It sounds like it's only these three that the Gemara mentions. There are Rishonim who learn that it means that other expenses for mitzvahs are also not counted in what's determined on Rosh Hashanah. Tosfos points out that if shachodesh miskasa boy means that the moon is invisible, then the expression should be shalavonim miskasa or something to that effect. So therefore, Tosfos gets into a long arichos, which is not printed to hear in Ein Yaakov of what Shachodesh Miskasaboy is. Among them is, and Hakosev brings a brief thing of it. One is that Miskase means that it comes out on. The word Keser, we also find elsewhere in Tanakh, and in Sefer Mishlei, means an appointed time. So it means which Rosh Chodesh is it that has an appointed Yom Tov on it is Rosh Hashanah. And then Tosfos discusses another point as well, is that we don't really mention the Korban, even though Rosh Hashanah is, of course, on Rosh Chodesh, we don't really mention Rosh Chodesh in the Yom Tov davening at all. We barely mention it at all. We have the one pasuk, Milavad Ola Sachodesh or Menchasa, that we mention in Musaf over there together with the Korbanos of Rosh Hashanah. And when we say Menchasa in this game, Kumadurba, then fine, we also say Shnei Seirim Lachaper, because one for the Seir of Rosh Hashanah and one for the Seir of Musaf. But other than that, the fact that it's Rosh Chodesh is really downplayed, that's another meaning for Chodesh Miskasabai. There's an explanation along the lines of that helps confuse the Sutton, because he knows that Rosh Hashanah comes out on Rosh Chodesh, so when we don't really make mention of Rosh Chodesh at all, then it confuses him. That's a whole nother thing. Anyway, so the point is that there's a choik on Rosh Hashanah of what a person is going to get for the year, and the Gemara continues, my mashma, the high choik, lishin and demizonihu, where do we see that the word choik is a lashon of an allotment of food? So dichtiv, because you have at the end of Parshas Vayigash, when you have the whole arrangement that Yosef is making in the Tzrayim, that everybody has sold themselves in the land of Paroi, except the pasuk says, except for the priests of Mitzrayim, the ochlorus chukah mashanosan lahem Paroi, they ate the choik that Paroi had given them. So we understand that a choik is an allotment of food. Now, Marsha points out earlier in that same pasuk, it says choik lakoinim, ki choik lakoinim me'es parai. But you could understand that to mean that choik means a law. There was a law that they were supposed to get a certain amount of money and then they buy food with that. But since the pasuk continues, that implies that they don't eat the choik itself and they can't eat the money either. Obviously, it has to mean that they actually received a stipend of food, an allotment of food from parai, and that's what they ate. So therefore, the Gemara is bringing that part of the pasuk. Mazutra says you have another source for the idea that choik means a portion of food. Shloima says to Hashem, Hatrifeni lechem choki, give me to eat the bread of my choik. So again, we see that choik is an actual allotment of food that a person eats. And Maharsha says the reason why Mazutra wants to bring that pasuk, what's wrong with the pasuk from Torah, is because again, va'ochlu as chukam could also mean conceivably that they were given an allotment of money and then they use it to buy food. But lechem chuki makes it very clear that he wants the right amount of portion of food, not to be rich and not to be poor. So we see very clearly from there that the word choik means a portion or an allotment of food. Um, yeah. Um, So the Gemara continues. Tanya, Omru, incidentally, there's an interesting vote from Levi Yitzchak, that his father, that talks about when we have that tefillin are called totofos. He has an explanation that we know tat the paspi shtayim paspa friki shtayim, but in addition, the tat represents the sounding of the shofar, and pat, as the Gemara in Moed Katan uses the word tat or tut to mean the sound of the shofar, and pas means bread, so therefore it means after the sounding of the shofar, then there's the allotment of bread for the year, like the Gemara is saying over here. The Gemara continues, Tanya, Omru all about Shammai HaZaken. They used to say about Shammai HaZaken, Kol Yom of Hoya Oichel L'Chvoid Shabbos. His whole life, he would eat the covered Shabbos. How so? Matzah Behema Noah, if he found a nice animal, Hoya Oimo Zul Shabbos, then he would say, this is going to be, he would buy it, and he would say, this is going to be for Shabbos. Then later on, he finds an even nicer animal. Then he sets aside the second one for Shabbos, and he eats the first one. This way, the nicer one will be saved for Shabbos. So it comes out now that he ate the first one, recovered Shabbos as well. The idea being, Marsha says, Udiyu in this Gemara, which was not here in Ein Yaakov, the Gemara mentions what the source that the Chachamim use as a basis for making the whole concept of Erev Tashilin is when it says Zohar es Yom HaShabbos Tekadshoy, Zohar implies something that could be forgotten. So when the Gemara explains, Zohrehu me'achash bolash dichoy. You have like this, a Yom Tov before Shabbos is likely to make you forget about Shabbos altogether. So therefore, the Chachamim put in Erev Tashilin that you should remember Shabbos all the more. But more generally, you have during the week, you may forget about Shabbos. So now the Gemara is stressing that Shammai made sure not to do that. He made sure that throughout the week, he's always remembering Shabbos in the sense that every time he finds a good animal or good food or whatever, he's always setting it aside for Shabbos. And then when he eats the next one, then he's eating that one. When he's eating the first one, that's also the covered Shabbos in order to have the better one saved for Shabbos. Avol Hillel HaZaken Midah Acheres HaYisabai. However, Hillel HaZaken had a different midah. Shekol Maisav Hoyu L'Shem Shemayim. He did everything L'Shem Shemayim, meaning he didn't do like Shammai is doing and reserving earlier in the week, this is going to be the portion for Shabbos. He would trust in Hashem that Hashem is going to arrange that he should have the nicest possible thing for Shabbos. Which, what do you mean, midah acheres? So Marsha explains, in other words, what Shammai is doing is definitely a great midah to remember Shabbos constantly. By the way, the Ramban on the Pasuk Zohar Siyana Shabbos the Kadshay mentions this point, and he mentions those other ways in which we're Makayim that also. When we call the days of the week in Lashon Kodesh, Rishon the Shabbos, Sheni the Shabbos, and so forth, we're also Makayim with that, the mitzvah of Zohar Siyana Shabbos the Kadshay. So he says, unlike in most Goyish languages where they have names for the days of the week and they don't at all remind you of Shabbos, here the way we do it actually reminds us of Shabbos, and that's also the Makayim. So Shammai had that Mila, but Hillel had a Midah Acheres, which in a way is a greater midah, the midah of bitachon, that Hashem is going to always provide him something nicer. Now you're going to think then, continues Marsha, that you might, if you saw Hillel doing that, that he's eating all the good food earlier in the week and seemingly not concerned about Shabbos, you might think that he's doing it stam because he likes to eat. Therefore, we're stressing that no, kol ma'isav hayu l'shem shamayim, given that we know that everything else Hillel did was l'shem shamayim, then therefore we know that this was also l'shem shamayim, the way he's acting. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Baruch Hashem Yom Yom, blessed is Hashem day by day, and as the pasuk continues, Yamos Lanu, every day Hashem will load us up with all the good that we need for that day. So therefore, so Hillel is saying that's his midah, and therefore he doesn't need to save from one. He doesn't need to save for later in the week. And in fact, the posts can talk about it, and they talk about that each one, of course, has an advantage over the other. It really depends on the level of the person's bitachon. If he has a level of bitachon like Hillel's, then he can do like Hillel. Otherwise, he's like a better doer like Shammai. Tanya Nami, Hochri, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Ves Shammai Omer Mechad Shabbos L'Shabbatich. Ves Shammai says, from the first day of the week, from the first day leading towards the next Shabbos, already you should be preparing for the following Shabbos, again, like he did with finding a nice animal, etc. Whereas Vasilo says, we bless Hashem day by day. So we see, in other words, that Beis Shammai followed Shammai in that, and Beis Hillel followed Hillel in that, that they each followed their own respective svara of how to show the greatest possible honor to Shabbos and balance that with bitachon. Okay. talking further about the greatness of Shabbos. When a person gives a gift to somebody else, he does not need to inform him. So you might have, if all of a sudden a person is going to get a gift and he's going to wonder where it came from, Rav Chama Bar Chanina is saying, you don't have to inform him. Shenema, as we find, when Hashem gave Moshe that his face was radiating in rays of light, or Moshe lo yada ki koran erponav, Moshe did not know that his face was shining. So we see, Hashem didn't tell him. So we see that you don't have to inform him. But the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction. When the pasuk says, Lodasti ani Hashem kadishem, that I'm giving you the Shabbos in order that you should to know that I am Hashem who makes you holy. So in other words, that means, so Rashi explains, how does the pasuk go? Lodas, I want you to keep my Shabbosim, and Lodas, Hashem is saying to Moshe, I want you to inform them what an important matana I want, what an important present I want to give them. So Rashi on the pasuk explains it all differently. Lodas also means that the goyim should be aware of the greatness of the Jewish people that Hashem gave us Shabbos. So meaning, Moshe, matona toiva yeshli beveis gnozei v'shabbos shema, I have a beautiful present in my treasure house. Its name is Shabbos, bani mevakash litna l'Yisrael, and I want to give it to the Jewish people, leis v'hodia oisam. So go inform them of this greatness of this gift that I want to tell, and I want to give them. So what are you saying, that when you give a gift, you don't have to tell? We're here, we're saying that Hashem is making a point of telling Moshe that he should inform the Jewish people about it. And in fact, the Braisa continues, Mikan Omer of Shimon Gamliel, Hanosin Pas Latinit, Tzorech Lo Yediyah L'Imo, where if you give bread to a child, you have to inform his mother. Now we're talking about, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, we're talking about a very little kid. So you can't necessarily tell him your name and expect him to bring the message back. You have to, you have to make a simon, as the Gemara is going to explain soon. And that way the mother will notice something out of the ordinary and she'll check it out. The point of it is, being that she says that, this way, when she finds the simon on him that we're going to describe soon in the Gemara, then she asks him, who did this for you? And he's going to answer, it was Pliny, and he also gave me bread. And this way, it's going to create more Avos Yisrael among Jewish people, because they're going to know that this person who otherwise they wouldn't have known did them a great thing and gave their child food. So we see that you should inform. And the answer is like Kasha, Hob Matana da Avidu Leigluy, Hob Matana Dele Avidu Leigluy. It depends whether you're talking about a Matana that he's going to find out. When Moshe's face was shining, soon enough, everybody's going to know. You see, the Psukim say that everybody was afraid to come close to him. In fact, Marashah brings from the Ramban on the Psukim over there that what happened was that once Moshe saw that they were taken aback by him, then he realized right away that something's unusual, and therefore Vayitzen upon a mask, and he put on a face covering, and then from then on, as the Psukim described, he would wear it whenever, except when he's speaking to Hashem, and except when he's teaching Torah to the Jewish people. But we see, so that was a matona da avida leigluy, in the sense that he's soon enough going to find out about it because everybody's going to tell him. Hub matona da loy avida leigluy, as opposed to a present which is not necessarily going to be revealed, they're not going to realize. So then in the case of giving the bread to the child, for example, he may well eat it by the time he gets home, and then therefore the parents are never going to know. Well, they want to ask Shabbos Nami Matona David Leigluy. New Shabbos, they're going to find out soon enough as well, because the first time they keep Shabbos, they're going to realize what a gift it is. The answer is Matan Skoda Loya Vida Leigluy. The answer is the reward, the ruchniistic reward for it is not something which is going to become so obvious. Therefore, Hashem wants Moshe to inform the Jewish people about it so that they should be aware of that reward, which otherwise they would not. Okay. I think there is also an explanation, although I don't remember the source of it, that says avida leigluye and loya avida leigluye can also mean whether you're going to know who gave it or not. Who else would have given Moshe that his face should shine is only Hashem. Therefore, Hashem doesn't have to inform him. As opposed to Shabbos, conceivably, you could have. It could have been something that a person invented or something. Moshe could have invented it on his own or something, chas v'shalom. And therefore, Hashem has to inform him, tell them that I'm the one who told it to you. Okay.
We said Omer Mar, so we said another expert, we said in that Braisa, Mikan Omer of Shimon Gamliel, Hanos and Pasta Chinek, Sarech Lo Hidiyah Le'imo, that if you give bread to a child, you have to inform his mother. So my Ovid, like, how exactly what do you do for the child in order to inform the parents? Again, the kid may be too little to be able to actually transmit the message. So Shayef Le Mishcha Umoler Le Kuchla. What you should do is rub oil on him, on his head or whatever, and put eye shadow around his eyes, and that way, when he comes home, his parents are going to notice that he's been taken well care of. They used to use oil, there for the skin, to soften the skin, and to use a sun protection, and whatever else. So when they see that he's smeared with oil, and that there's eye shadow around his eyes, which also helps prevent eye infections and things like that, then they're going to ask, who did this for you? And the kid is going to say who it was, and he's also going to mention that he gave me bread. However, the Gemara says, nowadays, though, in later times, they were concerned about kishuv. A kid comes home like that with oil and eyeshadow on, people may not think that it was a kind benefactor. They may think that somebody was doing kishuv to him. So then what should you do instead? What you should do is rub some of the same stuff that you gave him on him. So if it's bread, for example, then make sure there are some breadcrumbs on him. If it was some other kind of food, make sure there's a little bit of it rubbed on his skin, and that way it'll still be there when he gets home, and that way the parents will ask and so forth. And then that way, as we said, Abbas Yisrael will come out of it. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amr Rav Yosi, or Rav Yochanan, Mishum Rav Shimon Yechoi, Kol mitzvah shenosin HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, nosin lehem b'fahesla. Every mitzvah that Hashem gave the Jewish people, he gave them out in the open. You have, in fact, a pasuk that expresses this idea, where Hashem says, "Loi meirosh v'seisi dibarti." Hashem says, "I never spoke at the beginning in secret. When I gave the Torah, it was out in the open for everybody to know about it." This is famously the Kuzari brings, and it's brought in other Sfarim as well, that this is one of the greatest proofs of the truth of the Torah. No other nation can claim like that. No other nation ever has or will claim like that, and a revelation of their God and of their law to the entire nation of millions all at once. So most mitzvahs were given in public. Except for Shabbos, which was given in concealment. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Beini Uvein Bnei Yisrael. Hashem says, between me and the Jewish people, implying that it's something private between us. Marshall points out, the Pasuk says, Oisi lo'olam, and the word lo'olam there in the Pasuk is written without a vav, so therefore we can darshan it la'alem, that it means to hide it. So Shabbos is meant to be hidden. The question is, Yehoki lo'lin shu ovdik achav malei, in that case, the goyim should not be punished about it. Now, there's a wide variety of different explanations. What exactly are we talking about? What kind of punishment are the goyim susceptible for Shabbos that we're saying that they shouldn't be punished for it? Rashi says, we find that Hashem offered the Torah to all the nations, and they all rejected it, and later on, Hashem is going to hold them to account for that, as it talks about at the beginning of the Masechta Avodah Zarah. So the question is, if they were never informed about Shabbos, then how can they be held to account for it? The Marshal points out another angle on it as well. If Shabbos was not open, then the same way, like this, what happened? Hashem offered it to all the nations, and each one asked what's in it, and one was told, Lo Sirtzach, and they said, we don't want it. Another one was told, Lo Sinach, and they said, they don't want it, etc. But don't they have a valid claim? They could say, you know what, we didn't know that your Torah includes Shabbos. If we had known, we might well have accepted it. So in that case, then, so why did Hashem do it in secret, and why now? Is he holding them responsible for not accepting it when they should be able to say, you know what, but you have this important detail of it that you didn't reveal? On the other hand, Marshal points out that, no, what do you mean? The Gufakir, the Goyim are not being punished for not keeping Shabbos, just the opposite. Akum Sheshava Sky of Misa. So Marshal says the other way around. If Goyim keep Shabbos, then since they weren't informed about Shabbos, then if a Goy does decide to keep Shabbos, then maybe he shouldn't be punished for it. Because then in that case, if he doesn't know about it, then he's not doing it. L'shem mitzvah. And the answer is, as the Gemara is going to answer, that yes, the mitzvah of Shabbos was informed, just not the schar of it. So that's another answer. There's other different mafarshim that talk about different angles on it as well. The Maharam Shif talks further about it and talks about, after all, we have the din that even we know that if a goy, this that we're saying, Akum Shashavas Chayiv Nisa, would apply even if he does it on a different day of the week, then you still say that. So he gives yet another explanation of what it means that the goyim should not be punishable on it. There's an explanation, not from him, there's an explanation from somebody else, that if the goyim forced Jews to break Shabbos, then they shouldn't be punishable because they could say, we didn't know how important it is. So there's a lot of different possibilities what we mean with this phrase, lo v'enshu ov v'kachav malay. And the answer is no. Shabbos odin. They were informed, even the goyim were informed about Shabbos. To that extent, it was done publicly. Matan schora lo odin. They weren't informed about the reward there is for Shabbos, the ruchniyistika reward. So therefore, they can't get away with saying, well, we would have accepted the Torah if we had known about it, etc. Because they did know about Shabbos. They didn't know about the matan schora. That's something private between Hashem and the Jewish people, but that doesn't impinge on the fact that doesn't change the fact that the goyim didn't accept it and now they're not allowed to keep Shabbos and so on and so forth. The Iboyisema, or another answer, you could say, Matan Schara Nami Oydinu. In fact, Hashem did even tell them the Matan Schara, the reward for it, Neshama Yisera Lo Oydinu. What Hashem did not inform the goyim is about the concept of the Neshama Yisera. Now, Rashi over here gives a very interesting definition of Neshama Yisera. He says that a person has a lot more capacity on Shabbos for resting and for simcha and to have a bigger appetite. Like this during the week, a person might eat more and he gets full and he can't even stand the sight of food anymore. On Shabbos, a person has more of an ability to enjoy the food. Marsha refers over here to something that the Ramban says about it on Chumash, where he talks about that it means a ruchniistic aspect of the neshama that's revealed more on Shabbos than on weekdays. And of course, we have all over the place in later Sfarim, and especially in Sefer Chassidus, where it talks about what the neshama yaseira of Shabbos is exactly. Whatever the case, the point is that they weren't informed of the concept of the neshama yaseira. Ge'amr of Shimon Lokesh, neshama yaseira, nosan and noisan akarish bochu ba'odim erev Shabbos, on erev Shabbos, Hashem puts a neshama yaseira into a person, or Mitzvah Shabbos, Noitun Oisa Hemenu, and then on Mitzvah Shabbos, Hashem takes away that extra neshama from him. This is, by the way, this is the reason why we smell spices on Mitzvah Shabbos by Havdalah, is in order to refresh the neshama, since out of all the hanois of the world, the smelling spices is the one, like Gemara mentions in Brachas, that most affects the neshama. It has no effect on the physical guf, only on the neshama. Therefore, we smell it on Mitzvah Shabbos to make ourselves feel better for the loss of that extra neshama. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Shabbos vayinofash. Hashem rested and vayinofash on Shabbos. Now, if it just meant vayinofash, that it means that Hashem rested and that Hashem stopped work and was refreshed, then it would be the same thing, Marsha points out. Therefore, the Gemara is doubting that vayinofash refers back to earlier in the pasuk where it says ben yovein bnei Yisrael. So the vayinofash refers to something having to do with the Jewish people. It means kibin shashabbos. After a person has rested on Shabbos, and after Shabbos is over, vay of the nefesh, woe, the soul is lost. So we understand vay yinofash is short for vay nefesh, woe, that the soul is going away. So therefore, we see from that pasuk the concept of the neshama yaseira. So that was something told only to the Jewish people, and the goyim don't know about. But nevertheless, they do know of the concept of Shabbos, and therefore they don't have the excuse that they would have accepted the Torah if they'd known about it, or that they should be able to rest on Shabbos, etc., according to all the different explanations before of what the Gemara meant with that phrase. Okay. Further on, the Gemara continues talking about the dinim of Erev Tavshilin, and one thing it mentions that Shmuel used to make an Erev Tavshilin for the whole, it mentions over there that Shmuel's father used to, and then Shmuel continued after him, to make an Erev and have in mind everybody in the city of Nahada in case somebody didn't make their own Erev Tavshilin. We have the same thing. In the Nusach of Erev Tavshilin, you have the line over there, Lono L'chol B'nei Yisrael, Adorim B'ir Azois, B'shchuna Azois. Technically, really, that Loshen is really meant for the Rav of the community to say that when he's making an Erev Tavshilin on behalf of everybody else, then he would add that line. Lamaise, everybody does say it anyway. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Hahu Samya, there was this blind man, to have a Masader, Masnisa, Kameh de Mar Shmuel. He would arrange Mishnayos in front of Mar Shmuel. So in other words, he knew Mishnayos and Braises, Baal Peh, so therefore he would say them over in front of Shmuel and make sure they would discuss them in the Beis Medrash. So Rashi says, in other words, this guy knew all these Mishnayos and then Braises and things verbatim. So he was able to say them over. There's a whole discussion on the question. When we say that Rebbe composed the Mishnah, did he actually write it, or did he only compose it and it remained Baal Peh? In particular, you have Rashi in the various places where he talks about what Rebbe accomplished. Rashi consistently uses the expression that Rebbe was Masader Mishnayos and was Keveya Mishnayos, an expression like that, implying that it was still unwritten. On the other hand, the Rambam, for example, clearly says that Rebbe wrote the Mishnayos. You have actually, there's the famous Igeres Reb Shura Goin, where Reb Nissen Goin had asked Reb Shura a whole bunch of questions about the Mishnayos and the Gemara, and why the Mishnayos are structured the way they are, and why they were written down in the first place, and a whole bunch of other questions. And Reb Shura answers him with a long letter from which we know, among other things, so it tells us a lot of the process of how the Mishnah and the Gemara were put together. It's also one of the great resources for history because Reb Shura goes on to discuss over there the actual timeline of the Amoraim and the Rabbanan Sevaroyim and the Goinim, and we would know next to nothing about it if it weren't for him. Anyway, in this letter, there are actually two major versions of it that they found in Kisvei Yad, and eventually they printed. They nicknamed them Nusach Sfardi and Nusach Tzarfasi because they reflect these two opinions of Rashi and the Rambam respectively. The Nusach Tzarfasi consistently does not mention Rebbe writing the Mishnayos. The Nusach Sfardi does. And historians have argued over time which one is closer to Reb Shura's original. Nowadays it seems the Nusach Tzarfasi is closer to his original, but anyway, whatever. The point is, so you have this major argument whether the Mishnayos were written down by Shmuel's time or not. But even if they were written down, even if, like the Rambam says, they were written, Hakol Moedim, that they weren't widespread in writing, and therefore you needed somebody like this, Hahu Samya, to know them Baal Peh and tell them over in the written English. Anyway, so Chazya, to have a Otziv, Shmuel saw that this guy was upset. Omele Amaya Tzivas, he asked him, why are you upset? So the guy answers, because I didn't put an Eid of Tavshilin. And now what am I going to do as far as cooking for Shabbos? So Shmuel tells him, Smoich Adidi, you can rely on mine. I make the Eid of Chatzera, and I make the Eid of Tavshilin. I make the Eid of Tavshilin for the entire Nahadra, where Shmuel lived, so you can rely on mine. Lashana, the next year, Chazid, they have an Otsiv. Again, Shmuel saw that this guy was upset. He asked him, why are you upset? Again, he says, because I didn't make an Erev Tavshilin. So Shmuel says, this is different. Pesheat, you're being careless with the mitzvah. Therefore, you're not the kind of guy, Rashi explains, that I don't have somebody like you in mind when I make my Erev Tavshilin. So for everybody else, it'll be mutter to cook on Yom Tov going into Shabbos, but for you, it will be also because you're showing by acting this way that you're careless with mitzvahs. There's a great deal of discussion among Rishonim and Achronim about various details of the story, and one of the points is also Rashi mentions only Lashona HaAcheres. Rashi mentions the second time when the guy hadn't put an Erev Tavshilin. Rashi says it was Rosh Hashanah, and now the din is, the Gemara Udir discusses, because we know the 2 days Rosh Hashanah are considered like one, like Yom HaRichter, like one long day of Yom Tov, there with other 2 day Yom Tovim, you can make a T'nai. If you have a two day Yom Tov is Thursday or Friday, it's Thursday and Friday, and you forgot to put down an Erev Tavshilin before Yom Tov, you're allowed to make one the first day of Yom Tov with a T'nai. You say, the Gemara discusses, if today is Yom Tov, then tomorrow is not, then I don't need an Erev Tavshilin anyhow. And if tomorrow is Yom Tov, then I'm able to make an Erev Tavshilin today, and B'dayin Yehei Shara, etc. But Rosh Hashanah, that doesn't work, because it's Yom HaRichter. So Rashi, only the second time, explains that it was Rosh Hashanah, and that brings a lot of discussion among the Achronim. Why exactly is that so? Why doesn't Rashi explain that the first time as well was Rosh Hashanah? So you have a great deal of discussion among Rishonim and Achronim about a lot of different details within this story. Among them, the Baal Amor brings the idea that this guy did not even live in Nahadah. He lived in a nearby town, and he would come to Nahadah on Yom Tov by means of an Erev Tchumen. So therefore, Shmuel doesn't necessarily have him in mind with his Eid of Tavshilin in the first place. So now he's telling him you're a pesheya, and therefore it's also to you, but he's also including in that, like this, when I invited you last year, he says, to join in my Erev Tavshilin, I meant you're my guest. As a guest, you don't need to have had an Erev Tavshilin of your own because you're going to be eating my food anyway. But now that you're a pesheya, then I'm not treating you as a guest. And you live out of town, and therefore you can't be included in my Erev Tavshilin anyhow, so therefore you have a problem. And then within what Rashi says over here about it being Rosh Hashanah only the second time, there's also a lot of discussion about it, including that in fact, maybe the first time it was Rosh Hashanah as well, and the guy thought that maybe he could make, maybe the first time he was upset because he thought he wasn't sure whether we can make an Erev Tavshilin al Tanai, and the second time he has the same problem, or maybe in fact the first time it was a different Yom Tov. The Chacham Tzvi, for example, suggests that maybe the first time it was Shavuos, and the second time it was Rosh Hashanah. We're saying Rosh Hashanah HaCheres, because it is the following year. But in fact, the point is that it was two Yom Tovim in succession, where he didn't make an Erev Tavshilin, and therefore Shmuel is telling him he's a Bashaya. So you have a lot of different possible understandings of this din. But basically, that's how it comes down to. Every person has to make their own Erev Tavshilin. If they didn't, they can be Yotze with the rogs in a pinch, but only if we see they're not a Pesheya. Once we see they're a Pesheya, then like we see in the story, then they can't be Yotze with it. And then what you do in that case, then the Gemara discusses the exact details of what a person can do in that situation. We learned last time that when the Pasuk says, V'shulchan monis la'ein nochan loy, l'mishalai niach Erev Tavshilin, so other people can give him food as a gift. There's other possibilities the Gemara brings up. He can be makne his food to other people, and they'll cook it for him, and you have various possibilities that a person can do in a pinch. He was upset, meaning because he didn't know whether he can cook or not. Okay. Further on in the Perek, it talks about, now you have a machlokas v'shamay v'shilo, about two things. First of all, are you allowed to bring korbanos oil on Yom Tov, or only shlomim, given that an oila, after all, you don't eat from, a shlomim you do, so a shlomim, arguably, you can bring on Yom Tov, because fine, at least you have meat to eat from it, so therefore it's malachas ochel nefesh, but oila's not, and second of all, also, you have a machlokas, whether you're allowed to do smicha on the animal. Famously, this is one of the machlokas, and this was the very first machlokas that persisted for generations. The Mishnah tells us in the Sechta Chagiga that first Yosef and Yezer and Yosef and Yochanan argued about it, and it continued throughout each of the generations of the Zugas, where each time you had one of them held that you should be Soymech and one held you should be not, and eventually it came down to Shammai and Hillel, and Shammai held that you're not Soymech and Hillel held you are. So the Gemara mentions in this connection a story that happened before the peace here in Ein Yaakov. The Gemara brings a story where at one point the halacha was unsettled whether like this Shammai or this Hillel. The Gemara tells a story that Hillel himself one time came with an oila to the Bis Mikdash, and Talmidim of Bis Shammai ganged up on him and asked, what do you think you're doing? And he didn't want to start an argument, so he claimed that it's a shlamim. And then in the end, the Gemara tells the story, and it says eventually they decided once and for all the halacha is like this Hillel. After that happened the story that we have here in Ein Yaakov. So the Gemara continues. Shuv ma'aseh b'talmid echad b'talmid b'Bis Hillel shehei b'olase la'azor l'smichaleah. It happened one time that a Talmud of Bis Hillel brought an oila to the Azorah on Yom Tov to do smicha on it. Motzei Talmud echad b'talmid b'Bis Shammai. One of the Talmudim of Bis Shammai saw him omelay, and he says, mazu smicha, what is this smicha? Meaning, what are you doing smicha over here when Bis Shammai says that you shouldn't do that? Now, Tosfos points out in Masechta Chagiga, where it brings the story as well, that why isn't the guy from Bais Shammai asking about the very fact that he's bringing an oila, where according to Bais Shammai, he can't bring an oila either. And Tosfos answers, the guy didn't notice. He didn't know specifically that it was an oila. After all, a male animal can be either an oila or a shlomim. In the story with Hillel, he pretends that it's a female in order to pretend that it's a shlomim, and then with that, they went away. But here, you could after all say, if it's a male, it could just as well be a shlomim as well. So the guy from Bais Shammai, the Talmud of Bais Shammai, didn't notice that it was an oila, but he did notice that the person from Bais Hillel is getting ready to do smicha on it. So he's saying, mazu smicha, what's the smicha that you're trying to do, which is against what we hold. Now, by this time, the halacha had already been established like Bais Hillel. So the Talmud of Bais Hillel says to him, omalei, mazu shsika, what's this being quiet? In other words, you would do better off to be quiet, given that now the halacha has been established like this Hillel. In the previous story that the Gemara tells, Hillel tried to evade the whole thing because the halacha hadn't been decided one way or the the other yet, and Hillel didn't want to start an argument. But now that the halacha has been determined, like this Hillel, then the Talmud of Hillel is saying, so what do you want from me? So with that, he quieted him with a rebuke by saying, Mazush Sika, and the guy from Beis Shammai left. Amar Abaya, so Abaya says, you can learn a hurrah from this story. Hilkach, Hait Suva Mirabonim, the Amalei Chavre Milsa, when you have a young Talmud Chacham, where somebody else tells him something argumentative or insulting or whatever, Loi Lahadulei Milsa Tfei Mimai de Amalei Chavre. He should not say anything more than what the other guy told him. Don't make the argument bigger. You can give him back in his own coin, but no more than that. The Iyu Amalei Mazu Smicha, the Iyu Amalei Mazu Shsika, as we see that the guy from Beis Shammai says Mazu Shsika, and instead of the guy from Beis Hillel starting a whole argument, instead he just answers back Mazu Shsika. So we see he was trying not to make the argument bigger. So you can learn from that that's how a person should act. And the reason why we mentioned Tzuruva Merabonon, the Gemara mentions in Tainus that to a certain extent Tzuruva Merabonon, there's a reason. If he gets angry, there's a reason behind it. The expression in the Gemara is a Raisa who become Ratzvalei. Torah within him that burns within him and makes him more excitable. Nevertheless, the Gemara says even a Talmud Chacham has to work to make himself a calm person and not to continue arguments, and that's what the Gemara is saying over here, that even the Tzuruva Merabanan has a responsibility to make sure not to escalate the argument further. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Bez Adar Aleph. One of the Polish Rebbeim darshan on the pasuk when it says Oz Yomer Bagoyim Higdol Hashem Lasis in Eva, that Oz Yomer Bagoyim, then when Mashiach comes, the Goyim are going to say Higdol Hashem Lasis in Eva. Hashem has done a great, amazing things for the Jewish people, and we will respond to them with what it says. Next pasuk, yes, Higdol Hashem Lasis Imanu. Why? Because Hayunu Smeichim, because we were happy, and the S'chus of Simcha is why Hashem took us out of Golis. Yad Mamish, what? For the Shabbat, yeah, that Rebbe was bringing it as the point is that's the importance of Simcha, especially during Chodesh Adar. Okay, continuing on Dinim of Maftir, when Rosh Chodesh comes out on Shabbos, as we just had this past Shabbos, so of course, as we know that Torah is a Shemayim Kisi, if by mistake you do the after Torah, the regular parasha, so if you didn't already do the after brachas, then you say a Shemayim Kisi and only do the brachas after that. If you remember only after the brachas, then you do a Shemayim Kisi without the brachas. Similarly with Machor Chodesh, and similarly with other special Haftorahs like that, the same basic rule applies to all of them. As far as if Rosh Chodesh is Shabbos and Sunday, then Haftorah is Hashemayim Kisi, and Minhag Chabad is also that we add the first and last psukim of the Haftorah of Machor Chodesh, and we do on other similar occasions when you have Rosh Chodesh or Machor Chodesh is being preempted by some other Haftorah where we add the extra psukim at the end.